Okay, thank you so much, Rabbi Shechter. And yes, welcome back. More Lashon Hara discussions as we proceed through the 3 weeks. The way it was structured is that next week, God willing, is going to be more of a general, a little bit more philosophical perspective. Last week, as you heard, we spoke about Shiduchim. And tonight, talk about perhaps the most current of issues, the issue of the internet and social media and Facebook and WhatsApp and all of that. And it seems necessary to start with a disclaimer. This is not about bashing the internet. You have an iPhone and an iPad and connected 24/6. Certainly not opposed to the internet in a general sense. And we all know that there is a lot of good that we're able to get from the wonderful technology. First and foremost, Yadi Torah and all of its related sources. So much Torah that is spread nowadays that never could have been dreamt of years ago. I remember commenting recently, my grandfather wrote Svarim years ago and probably wondered how much distribution they would ever get and could never imagine that the day will come that someone sitting in Hong Kong with a laptop can open up HebrewBooks.org or Otra Chofa and find it all there and searchable. So there's no question that when it comes to spreading Torah, the internet does tremendous work. And when it comes to spreading chesed, the internet does tremendous work. And that, of course, is one of our key missions over the 3 weeks, to seek to enhance unity and a sense of togetherness and to make sure that we can care about each other in ways that perhaps we didn't fully realize in previous years. And now we are able to be connected if we want to be in ways that never could have been imagined. And that gives us the ability to be empathetic in unprecedented ways. We can be aware of people's problems that we never would have been able to have attention for or cognizant nature of. We are able to connect and to mobilize in order to help people. And we've all seen tremendous things happen that way through WhatsApp or through Facebook or through other types of social media where people's problems have been solved, whether they are financial problems or whether any other type of problems, connections that have been made through this ability to reach out and create networks. There's no question that there's tremendous gain that can be realized through the internet and through social media. And it's not only of the nice nature. So we're talking here about Lashon Hara, as we know, and that may make you think that, okay, the next step is to bash the internet because of the ability to spread Lashon Hara, and we'll get to that. But it's also important to note that sometimes it's crucial in being able to spread information that's not so happy, it's not so cheerful, but it's still necessary. So when we talk about the whole concept of Lashon Hara, we discussed last week a little bit, the fact that there are things that we're not allowed to say, but there are things that we're obligated to say. There's information sometimes that needs to be spread, and it's not always so pleasant. We had a little back and forth last week about the question of whether it should be properly termed Lashon Hara when it's necessary to share information, when it's what we call toeles, when it's going to prevent danger, or perhaps when it's going to improve society in ways that are not as pressing, but are still helpful to root out problems, so then the internet is also able to be effective on that front. And being that, like we discussed last week, sometimes that is necessary. And we mentioned last week the position of the Pesachei Tshuva on Aruch Chaim, was one of the rabbinical court judges in Vilna, who commented that everyone gets all worked up about what we're not supposed to say, but they don't pay enough attention to failing to say what needs to be said, how big of a problem that is. So if there is need sometimes to get out even negative information, so the ability of the internet and social media to accomplish that is also important. Even if it's not so cheerful, even if it's not so pleasant, it serves a crucial role. And that's something that we have to acknowledge in a positive sense as well. The whole concept of Lashon Hara L'Toeles, the whole system of how exactly we make those decisions, is an important one. We spoke about that a little bit last week. Maybe we'll come back to it again next week. It's a little bit of a longer story. If we have time, maybe we'll address it in greater detail tonight. But just to mention that up front, that that's also an important role that the internet plays. And therefore, that's something we should acknowledge when we begin as well. So having stated that there are all these positives that can be brought about, there's so much good and blessing that comes with the internet, I don't even really need to tell you about the negatives on the surface. We're aware of the harm that can happen in many different ways. And if our theme is Lashon Hara for these weeks, so we will focus on that. We know that if it's harmful to speak negatively about someone when it's not justified, so there's no question that that harm is magnified in ways, again, previously inconceivable by the internet. News, or fake news, or misinformation, negative news, can travel far quicker than it ever did before, can go much further than it ever did before, and perhaps most damaging, can last much longer than it ever did before. It's not going to disappear from the news. It's going to be there on the internet forever. So in so many different ways, the damage is intensified in a very significant fashion. And of course, that raises the stakes. And that changes the landscape of what we're doing when we engage in that kind of conversation. And that requires us to have a whole different mindset, a whole different way of thinking. And that's really what I'd like to talk about for a few minutes. Not necessarily to say internet good or internet bad, but to help sensitize us to how the world has changed and how everything is different about how we interact. And what does it mean for us to internalize that awareness and to adapt our behavior and our sensitivities to this new landscape? And to illustrate the point, we'll mention a law in Hilchos Lashon Hara, two laws in the rules of Lashon Hara, which both seem surprising. They're subject to a lot of debate. And we'll spend a few minutes trying to understand them and see what they may tell us about how the world has changed. There is a statement in the Talmud in two places, which is surprising. If I were to speak Lashon Hara, if I were to say, I'm guessing there's nobody in the room named Yehoshaphat. Is that a safe guess? The name has kind of fallen out of favor. So if I were to say that this guy, Yehoshaphat, if I were to take anybody in this room aside for a moment and say, Yehoshaphat, he's a jerk. That's Lashon Hara. Can we agree? It's not a nice thing to do. Now, what if instead of taking one individual aside and telling them privately that Yehoshaphat is a jerk, what if I say it right now in front of everybody in the room while it's being recorded? I say, you should all know Yehoshaphat is a jerk. I say the same thing, but I say it in public. Does that make it better or worse? What would you think? I would think worse. And if you think worse, you're in good company, because that's what the Chafetz Chaim writes as well. Right? Very intuitive. That's what the Chafetz Chaim writes, that to speak Lashon Hara to one person is bad. To speak to more than one, to speak to a group, is exponentially worse. Probably not just linearly worse, but worse exponentially, because it's going to spread much more quickly and reach many more people. So that's what we would all think, we including the expert on the subject of Chafetz Chaim. And yet, there is a statement in the Talmud, which, hard to understand on the surface, says the Talmud, Kol milsa dis amras ape tlasa, anything that is said in front of three people, les behu mishum lishtabisha, is not subject to the prohibition of Lashon Hara. So here, this idea that something that is said into a larger group, the idea of three is really shorthand for everybody, because the assumption is that chavra chavra islay, v'chavra the chavra chavra islay, your friend has a friend, and your friend's friend has a friend, and your friend's friend has a neighbor who has a babysitter, who has a hairdresser, who has a dog walker, who has another friend. So once three people know something, essentially the whole world's going to know. So that's a way of saying public knowledge. Something that's related in front of three people, apparently Lashon Hara does not apply. It's a very difficult idea to understand. Requires a lot of explanation. And the truth is, there are at least four completely different interpretations among the Rishonim as to what it means. You may have heard of the principle in the abstract, the idea of ape swasa, this notion that something that is public is somehow excluded from the laws of Lashon Hara. And one of the interpretations, again, maybe we'll have an opportunity to expand on this, probably the most common interpretation is that of the Rambam. And the Rambam understands it to mean that we're not talking about the initial conversation. That certainly, to say Lashon Hara in front of a larger group clearly is worse than saying it to one person. But what the Talmud means is that we're talking about the listeners here. That if it has already been said in public, so then there is license to continue discussing it. You're not adding to the damage if you talk about it. Now, there are a lot of important caveats about that, and that's not the only interpretation, and that itself has a lot of relevance to a forum such as the internet with its very public nature, but we'll come back to that. But that's the most common interpretation, is that it's not referring to the speaker. The speaker, for sure, is doing something much worse if he's speaking in front of a crowd. We're only talking about the listener. That which is already out there is public. You're not causing any more harm if you speak about it. That's basically the Rambam's position. So far, so good? Oh, so what are the other three interpretations? Or three people? Or three other? Mm-hmm. So if the first, the way the Rambam understands it is that if the speaker said it in front of a crowd of at least three, so then it can be assumed that it's going to spread. So if one of those three wants to share it, they're not causing any extra harm because it's already out there. Now you probably have a bunch of questions on that because there's a lot of holes, and that maybe we'll come back to either tonight or next week, but that's just the most common interpretation, the Rambam's interpretation. That you're right, it's not talking about the speaker. The speaker for sure had no right to speak in front of a large crowd. It's just after the fact referring to the listener. Hi. On the other hand, if you say it in front of a crowd, then it's going to get back to the person that he had a chance to refute it. Oh, okay. So that's an interesting point. Okay, so that's an interesting point. That may be relevant to the next issue, actually, because maybe you'll see how you vote on this point. So there is another interpretation, which is what I'd like to focus on tonight, and that is the view of Tosfos. Tosfos on the side of the page of the Talmud. Tosfos says it actually is talking about the speaker, that somehow the speaker is not doing as much of a offense because it's a large crowd. And maybe it's even permissible. How could that be? So Tosfos combines this with another shocking statement. If I say Yehoshaphat is a jerk to one other individual, that's Lashon Hara. What if I say it not only in public, but Yehoshaphat himself is sitting right here? Does that make it better? Does that make it worse? Now you may say it gives him an opportunity to respond. So that's one element to consider. But aside from that, I'm also embarrassing him, right? So for a lot of reasons, you would think that it's probably worse to say this in front of this, in front of the individual I'm talking about, in front of the subject. And once again, you're good company, because that's what the Chafetz Chaim writes again. Chafetz Chaim says about that also. To speak Lashon Hara behind someone's back, that's terrible. But when they're there, it's worse, because on top of the Lashon Hara, you're also embarrassing them. And that's also a huge transgression, perhaps even bigger than Lashon Hara itself. And if you've learned the Gemaras about the Churban Habayis, the Tisha B'Av Gemaras, one of the few passages we're allowed to learn on Tisha B'Av, it's about how someone being humiliated in front of others basically led to the entire destruction. So I would think, and you would think, and the Chofetz Chaim would think, that if the subject sitting right here, that makes it worse. And yet, there's another statement in the Talmud that kol milsa dis amras ape mara lesbuhu mishum lishmedisha. Anything that is stated in front of the subject. If you're speaking in front of the person who's the topic of conversation, then again, it's not Lashon Hara. Now, this is, as you would imagine, a controversial statement, and many don't accept this, and the Rambam seems explicitly does not postulate like this statement. But it requires explanation, at least. What does it mean? And the Tosfos, again, on the side of the page, the Tosfos explains both of these striking statements in a similar fashion. Explains them together. What does it mean that it's not Lashon Hara if I'm speaking in public or if I'm speaking in front of a subject? Why is that true? Tosfos explained that we're not talking about straight-out negativity here. This isn't your normal case of Lashon Hara. I'm saying something nasty, and somehow it's better to say it in front of a large crowd or in front of a person I'm talking about. Rather, says Tosfos, we're talking about a very narrow situation. It doesn't have a lot of relevance because it's a very narrow situation. What are we talking about? You're not really saying something negative. You're saying something ambiguous. Something that could be interpreted negatively or positively. You happen to mean it positively, but it's a little confusing, and the audience might interpret it negatively. For example, let's say I were to say that Yehoshaphat, you can always count on him. So you don't know what I mean. Do I mean he's reliable, you can always count on him? Or do I mean you can always count on him to mess up? He'll always do the wrong thing. So it's a little ambiguous. So presumably I shouldn't say that. I shouldn't say something where there's a 50-50 chance that my listener is going to take it as a negative statement. Says Tosfos, that's where these situations help. That if I were to take you aside, take one person in the room aside and say, oh, Shafet, you can always count on him, you wouldn't know what I mean, and you may walk away confused. You may think it's a negative statement. But if I were to get up at the shul dinner, and Yehoshaphat was sitting right there, and I say, Yehoshaphat, you can always count on him, then I have the right to assume that you understand what I mean, that I am praising him, that I'm saying he's reliable. Why? What's the assumption here? Tosfos is assuming that yes, we're all nasty sometimes. That's what the Talmud says, v'kulam ba'avak lashon hara. All of us are occasionally guilty of some form of lashon hara. That's inevitable. We're all going to say something once in a while that's not so nice. But if we are talking in front of a lot of people, and it's going to spread, and especially if we're talking in front of that individual who's the subject, then we're not that nasty. That much we can assume that we're not going to do, and I have a right to trust my listeners. They'll understand that I mean it positively. So far, so good? So now let's think about the implications of that. This Tosfos, it's not dated, so assume Tosfos is writing about 800, 900 years ago. Tosfos is assuming that even if we're sometimes nasty, but we would never be nasty when a lot of people can hear it and spread it, and when the person we're talking about can hear it. So let me ask you, in 2022, where our conversations don't happen ape tlasa, they don't happen in front of three, they happen ape 7 billion on the World Wide Web, is the assumption still true? Is it still the case where Tosfos says that if we're nasty, okay, but we wouldn't be nasty in front of a lot of people? And we wouldn't be nasty when the person we're talking about is present?
But it's only when there's an ambiguous
statement. Only when there's what? Well, that's the context. That's what Tosfos was explaining. So the context, it's even worse. Right. No, there's no question. What we're just looking at here, which is striking, is that Tosfos is assuming that there is a basic principle here, that if you're making an ambiguous statement, so we have to worry if it's just one-on-one, because maybe that's the kind of context where it might be nasty, it might be nice. But if I'm speaking in public, or I'm speaking in front of the subject, I'm for sure going to be nice. So that was the context in which that came about. Is that still the assumption? Yeah? The world has changed. Right? Our whole environment has changed. Oh, so that's an extra factor. We're going to get to that also.
No,
that's
even
a,
not
yes. That's a crucial element. We're not even up to that yet. You're right. That's very, very important. We'll come back to that. But before we even get to that, and that might be part of the reason, it's a crucially important point, but the fact is that our sensitivities have changed. Now we interact in a mass way. We talk to people all at once, and we engage in a way where certainly we should assume that the people we're talking about can see it also. And whatever we put out there is going to be out there forever. And yet, our sensitivities have radically shifted. And to highlight the point also, it's not just about Lashon Hara. It's about other related prohibitions also. So we have a prohibition called Anas Devarim, very much the focus during the 3 weeks. You say something that inflicts pain on someone else. You say something that causes emotional anguish. So here again, you can see that there's a whole different world now than there used to be. And one way, unfortunately, to notice this is if, Rahman al-Islam, God forbid, this is some kind of a tragedy. And it's reported on one of the news sites, on one of the religious Jewish news sites. You can look at the comments, and you'll see things there that nobody would ever say at a shiva. Nobody would ever go to a shiva in front of people who are grieving and say the things that they put in the comments. And yet, they know that the same grieving people are very likely going to see this and are going to feel the same way they would have had someone come and said this to their face. And yet, what changed? So there's a whole different environment, there's a whole different atmosphere. And it may connect somewhat to what you're referring to before. So there is such a thing. So there is such a thing that the psychologists have labeled the online disinhibition effect, which is the reality, which may greatly contribute to this, that even people who are careful when they're talking face to face and feel a sense of connectedness and empathy, when they're behind the screen and they're in their pajamas in their mother's basement and they're not actually looking face to face, find themselves capable of saying things they never would have said anywhere else. So that idea of the online disinhibition, you are disinhibited, that face to face you'd be inhibited in a good way, you would hold back. But in this context, it's no longer true. And that's before you even get to anonymity. Now, when anonymity is involved, that's a whole different world. And that, for sure, disconnects one from the consequences and the impact. And that, the philosophers have known for many, many centuries. Plato wrote about this, about the question they had discussed about the Gyges ring, if there was a ring that could make someone invisible. No one would see what they were doing. Could we still trust that people would act in a moral fashion, knowing that no one could see that? And the concern was that's very unlikely, that most of us need a little bit of visibility in order to be kept in check. And if we assume that in the area of speech and communication, that there are things we're not supposed to be doing, that there are offenses, and yet it's possible to do these without being seen, with total anonymity. So what kind of a world are we going to bring about? What kind of an environment are we going to have? So this is a very serious redefining of our society. There's some questions before. Hi.
Should they partake in this type of discourse? And also, does it extend also to the political discourse of dealing with?
So these are crucial questions, which I hope to try to address in more detail in the next few minutes. But also, to go back to the way we framed things at the beginning, so our goal here is not to bash the internet necessarily and say that it's all off limits, But if all we can accomplish tonight is that we can raise our awareness, if we have a heightened sensitivity to how the world has changed and what that may require of us, so that'll already be an accomplishment. So I'm not going to say what you should or shouldn't do. I'll say a little bit more details in the time that we have. And I think there are some other details that we can point to and we can address. But the most important takeaway I'll say right now is a awareness of just how we're living in a whole different world and how the interactions have much more positive potential also, but also tremendous negative potential. And the first step is to be aware of that, is to internalize that recognition. Hi.
What happens if it's something that's true?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's a reckless driver.
Yeah. Right, that's what we mentioned at the beginning. The first times we said that the internet is valuable for spreading good things like Torah and Chesed, and it's also valuable for spreading important things that aren't so cheerful, that aren't so happy, but are necessary. So sometimes there are important warnings that have to be brought to the world's consciousness, and in that sense, the internet is able to carry that out more effectively than we could have once upon a time. However, it's going to be a lot more complicated for a lot of other reasons, and we'll try to bring that about. So again, we're not necessarily saying good or bad, but to be aware and to be sensitive of just how tricky this environment is. And to illustrate it a little bit more, so in addition to speaking Lashon Hara, so we normally refer to a prohibition of conveying unjustified, unnecessary, negative information. We also have a prohibition called avak lashon hara, a second degree lashon hara. So what is avak lashon hara? So there are a couple of different definitions of what's included in avak lashon hara. But one of the more well-known and more surprising ones is that not only can I not say negative things that are unnecessary, I'm also not really supposed to say good things about people. Why is that? Well, Lashon Hara, by definition, has the word Hara, right? It's bad, so why should saying good things be a problem from a perspective of Lashon Hara? So the way most of the Rishonim understand is that often when you speak positively about somebody, there is the danger that you are going to evoke a rebuttal. So you're going to say something nice about someone, and the person you're talking to says, you think he's so great? Let me tell you some stories. I can tell you why this person is not so great at all, etc., etc. So that's very striking on a lot of levels because it shows us not only, maybe in a surprising sense, that even nice things we have to be careful about, but it also shows us that as much as it's hard to take responsibility for everything that we say, here there's an additional level that we also have to be responsible for what we provoke, for what we cause others to say. And that's a pretty heavy burden, but that's something that also requires greater sensitivity. And just to illustrate that, so in terms of this prohibition of not saying good things because they may bring about negative statements, so that's a general rule. Clearly, we can all understand that there are exceptions because we've all seen nice conversation happen, and we don't assume it's necessarily always problematic. Because in many cases, you can assume that hopefully you know your audience, and that there are environments in which you can say something nice, and nobody who you're talking to is going to feel an urgent need to jump up and argue. So we probably all allow ourselves the latitude to kind of make that decision that we can say nice things in a friendly environment, and we're not going to provoke a rebuttal. So that might have been possible in the pre-internet era. However, in the World Wide Web environment, I can guarantee you that there's nobody who is so parf that there isn't somebody else who has a Google alert set up with their name, waiting for anybody to mention them, and as soon as their name pops up, they're going to start coming in, oh yeah, let me tell you about that guy, how terrible he is, you think he's great, and I can tell you all my stories. So as possible as it may have been once upon a time to say, okay, this is a safe crowd, but in the world of the internet, it becomes very, very tricky. So that's another example of how our environment is just completely different and how it requires a new set of tools. Now, what might be even more surprising is that this issue was actually anticipated by Rabbeinu Yonah many, many centuries ago. Rabbeinu Yonah, one of the great Rishonim and the great Bali Musar, writing in his Shari Tshuva, Rabbeinu Yonah writes that you can see this issue when it comes to Avak Lashon Hara. He never dreamt of the internet, but he wrote that clearly it becomes more of a problem the larger the crowd is. The more people there are listening, so the greater chance there is that there's going to be somebody there who's going to feel a need to object. So, how do you account for that? So writes Rabbeinu Yonah that when that's the case, the more there is such a risk, so the more it's important to make sure that the environment that's created by the speaker and by the hosts is one where it's understood that that kind of conversation is not going to be welcome. That if I'm going to try to say something nice and you're going to jump up and explain why the person is not so great, so then that's not going to be the kind of conversation that's going to be welcome in that environment. Assuming, again, that it's not some necessary warning, but somebody just being nasty. So you have to set the tone, says Rabbeinu Yonah, all the more so when it's a larger crowd, to establish what kind of conversation is welcome. So this becomes crucially important in a contemporary environment, because if it is true that you're responsible not only for what you say, but what you provoke others to say, so then that creates a very significant issue. And the way you can address it a little bit is by using whatever power you have within that internet forum to establish a tone. And of course, putting together what we said before, if there's going to be anonymous comments in your space, whether it's a blog with comments or Facebook, or Facebook doesn't so easily allow anonymous comments, but other environments where there are anonymous comments possible, so then the risk again is going to significantly go up. So to whatever extent it's possible to be on top of that, that's one of the calls of the moment, to be aware that we're functioning in a different kind of environment, in a different context, and we have to account for that, and we have to do what we can in order to make sure that we're addressing that. There are a number of other ways in which our environment is significantly different, and again, ways that have been anticipated in earlier sources, and yet take on a whole new level of relevance in the internet world. For example, the Chafetz Chaim, writing again before there was any kind of communication environment like we have today, the Chafetz Chaim writes that it's not only Lashon Hara is spread through talking about someone, there are other ways also you can disparage someone. And he gives an example. Let's say somebody sends you a letter, and you think the letter is not very impressive. Maybe it has grammatical errors, spelling errors, and maybe you think that it's just silly or wrong. So the Chafetz Chaim says to show this to someone else in order to embarrass the letter writer, writes as a prohibition of Lashon Hara. So that's probably the case, and yet probably didn't come up that often. How often did it happen you received a letter in the mail that you thought was so laughable that you carried around in your pocket for everybody you might meet in the street and took out this letter and showed it to people so that they could understand why you think it is worth mockery? But today, if you get something in your email that you think is worth making fun of, how easy is it to hit forward or to post it on your Facebook page and to let the whole world see it? And more significantly, it's not just how easy it is, but how casually do we do that? How easy is it just to decide to hit forward and to send it to however many people in ways that would never have even come to mind, would never even occur to us when dealing with a paper letter. Or, in a similar fashion, let's say I have an issue with somebody, and I feel there's something I need to say to them and needs to be talked out. So presumably, once upon a time, I would have taken them aside and said, listen, I've got a problem with what happened here. I probably would not have done, while I was doing that, I probably wouldn't have asked 10 other people to come listen while I yell at this guy. However, nowadays, it's regularly done. If you have a problem with someone, you send them an angry email. And you copy however many people you feel you also want to be yelling in front of. So again, this is something which is so much easier to do than it ever was. And because it's easier, it's also something that happens without a second thought. And perhaps, again, our obligation is to have that second thought and to realize that our environment is different and that things happen that wouldn't have happened once upon a time. Many of them are good, but many of them are not so good. And how to be aware of that and how to factor that in. So far, so good. So another major area to consider, worthy of its own discussion, is what we call Kabbalah Lashon Hara. That we know that not only is there a prohibition to be the conveyor of such information, but there is also a parallel prohibition. You're not allowed to receive information that qualifies as Lashon Hara. Now that was a huge debate, what that means, because listening, receiving is generally a passive act, and how exactly to define a prohibition of receiving Lashon Hara is itself a tricky concept. That's also something maybe we'll have an opportunity to expand upon a little bit next week. But for now, it could mean a number of things. Chafetz Chaim understood that it means to believe things that are negative and that are irrelevant, that are not important for protection. So that's one level. But what does that mean as far as just the intake? So is there a prohibition to listen to Lashon Hara? So the Chafetz Chaim, for one, writes that that is not the prohibition of Kabbalah Lashon Hara. Kabbalah Lashon Hara is more than just listening. It has to do with taking it as a given and believing it fully, again, even when it's not necessary for anyone's protection. But he also writes, and we can intuitively understand, that even if just listening isn't specifically the act of Kabbalah Lashon Hara, but there's clearly a very short jump from listening to believing, and therefore, for the most part, listening would be ill-advised. So if you don't have any reason to think that what is being said to you is potentially important, a potentially warning of a danger, trying to solve some serious problem, so then listening to Lashon Hara, we could assume, is a bad idea. So if we're to be made clear to you before the conversation starts, somebody were to come up to you and say, hi, I'm interested in telling you some Lashon Hara right now, do you choose to accept or reject? But then presumably we would decide, please leave me out of it. Now, it's not so simple because, as we alluded to, sometimes there may be something you need to know. And especially if you're in a leadership position, for example, Rav Chaim Moser Gazinsky wrote that any rabbi of a congregation or a principal of a school has an obligation to at least listen to what's being said because it may affect the safety of those under their command. So they do have to at least listen, even if that doesn't necessarily mean that they should take everything that they're hearing as absolutely factual. And the Talmud has a statement that regarding potentially dangerous information, so the Gemara states, "Afal pi d'lekibulei lo mibay," even if we're not supposed to take it all as definite truth, but lemechush mebay, we have to at least factor it in as a possibility. We have to be aware if there's something that's potentially harmful, So we may not be being told the truth at the moment, but we have to keep our ears open in order to be able to assess if it is, if it's something that needs protective measures to be taken. So it's tricky. Now, when it comes to general Lashon Hara, so there is a balance here that we shouldn't accept unjustified Lashon Hara. We probably shouldn't even listen if we see it coming. But if there's potentially something harmful that we need to know about, so then we would need to listen, and then we'd have to create a greater space between listening and accepting uncritically. We'd have to figure out how to assess what we're being told and to understand just whether it is important or not, whether it's crucial or not. So that was always challenging. That was always a difficult balance. And the Talmud talks about in that context. It's also, now we're approaching in between two fast days now, but one of the four fast days about the Chorban is Tom Gedalia, different time of year, but it's part of the same unit. And the Talmud says that Gedalia was assassinated because he didn't get this balance exactly right. He didn't listen to and believe what he should have believed, which was a warning about the plot. So that's part of the cautionary tale about how we do have to know how to sift through what's important and what's not important, what to take in and what not to take in. So that was always difficult. It was difficult for Gedalia and difficult for everybody since. But it is much more difficult when it comes to the internet, because now we have information coming at us from all different directions, and it becomes very hard to know what's reliable and what isn't reliable. And the pressure is coming from different directions as well, because for so many reasons, the modern society is one where we're interconnected in ways that wasn't always the case. And therefore, what's happening around us takes on a higher level of importance than it did once, and being aware and informed becomes even more important than it was once upon a time. Now, the truth is, unfortunately, we've all just had 2.5 years of pandemic, so that reminds us of just how much it's important for us to be aware of what's going on around us, and no one is isolated. And that's not new. That's not because of the internet. If anything, that the internet is able to help with. But there are many other ways in which we are newly vulnerable and newly exposed, and therefore the need to be informed of that which is true and relevant is greater. But at the same time, we're surrounded by information that is of very questionable reliability. And that's for so many reasons. Much of it is anonymous. Much of it is not carefully considered before it's put out there on the internet. And we're not dealing with professional news organizations anymore exclusively. And even to the extent that we are, the whole environment for news is different. And this is a problem that predates the internet. It goes back to the advent of the 24-hour news stations. And it was commented on at the time that it used to be that the news was on twice a day. So at least there was a few hours to carefully consider what's being said, give a little bit of thought to what should be conveyed to the public and what shouldn't. And there was a little bit of room for deliberation. Once they had the 24-hour news channels and they were all in competition with each other, so there's no longer any kind of time frame, and the highest priority becomes getting that scoop out there as quickly as possible. And as some commentators put it at the time, there was a shift that the ingredients of the news was now being presented as the news. Meaning, once upon a time, there was a process where you would go through what was being put forward and figure out what the news actually is. Now there's such a rush, so what's coming out is really the ingredients of news rather than news itself. And that's still assuming that you're talking about professional, accountable reporters. But so much is not coming from people who are professional or accountable or even identifiable. So how do you function in an environment where that's where your news is coming from? And it's also not that you can just say, well, I'll just only focus on the professional accountable news because the role of that has shrunk in the information environment. It's hard for newspapers and news channels to stay afloat because nobody wants to pay for news. Why should you do that when you can get it for free from some anonymous source? So the whole environment of where our news is coming from has greatly shifted, and yet it's in some ways more important than it ever was. So a big message that comes from that is that we have to be educated consumers, that we have to be aware, and this goes back to our opening point, that more than any one specific item, it's a general awareness of just how everything around us is different, and how that requires a heightened sensitivity and a heightened appreciation for what that means. And the question was asked before, so what about involvement in the political realm and the like, where there certainly is a opportunity and a responsibility, especially living in a democracy where we have the opportunity to vote, we have the possibility of being activists when necessary, of getting involved in trying to correct situations that need attention. So there is a greater need to have this balance, to be aware of what's going on, but to be accurately aware. And because there's so much coming at us so quickly, it takes a greater sensitivity to do that. And we talk about a prohibition of Kabbalah Lashon Hara. It's very striking the way the Torah phrases it. The Gemara understands the Pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim to be the source for the prohibition of Kabbalah Lashon Hara. Pasuk says, Lo Sisa Shema Shav, which is hard to translate. It means something along the lines of, you should not support, uphold, lift up a report, a Shema, that is Shav. So what does Shav mean? You should not accept or uphold a report that is Shav. What does Shav mean? So it happens to be that Rashi and Uklis translate like that. It means Sheker. So that's itself interesting because it's a much longer discussion. We'll get to this a little bit next week. That the idea that Lashon Hara is here being identified with Sheker, which is maybe different than we learned in grade school, which is something which itself is fascinating to ponder. But the idea that there's a prohibition not to accept a false report. So here, Rabbeinu Yonah writes in Shai Tshuva again, Rabbeinu Yonah writes that presumably if we know something is false, we don't need to be told not to accept something we know is false. So presumably you need to add a word here in terms of interpreting it, and it means do not accept as true that which may or may not be true. And that is already pointing us in the direction of this skepticism that we need to sometimes have, this critical ear, and to know that not everything that is told to us is necessarily true. And the Torah is essentially saying that we have an obligation to be an educated listener and to try to assess, okay, maybe this is important and maybe it's crucial information, maybe it's completely false, and I have to bring the tools that I can to be a critical listener, and that's a part of my obligation as somebody who follows Hilchos Lashon Hara, as somebody who is sensitive to these rules. It means also the way I process information requires that kind of educated consumer attitude. So all the more so in the era of the internet, we just need to be aware, we need to be aware of all of these challenges and all of these elevated risks at the same time as our need to be informed, whether it's for political activism or personal safety or everything in between, and to incorporate those awarenesses into what we do. And I'll just add, we're almost out of time, and there's no greater harm caused by speech than by delaying Meyer. But so just to try to squeeze in another word or two, but part of the prohibition of a recipient of Lashon Hara is, as the Chafetz Chaim notes, that yes, maybe I can or cannot control what I believe or what I hear, but certainly I shouldn't do things to endorse what is being told to me if it's actual Lashon Hara. So I shouldn't nod in agreement, I shouldn't smile, and I certainly shouldn't help circulate what was being said. But what does that mean in an environment where, like we said before, an email can be forwarded in a tenth of a second, You can post something in your Facebook page without thinking about it. And every time you open up a web page, so you're adding to its traffic, you're adding to its hits. Is that considered to be supporting that web page, supporting its message? What happens if you do link to a page, link to a news site? We said before, sometimes people do that in order to mock something, which is its own problem, but sometimes they're doing it in order to spread the information, and sometimes they're doing it to call attention to misinformation. So the balance here, the stakes are so much higher, doesn't give us the ability to run away from it because it's important on both sides. But we have that education and to have that awareness and to appreciate both the pitfalls and the benefits, the problems and the solutions that come from this whole new environment that we have been blessed with is a big part of the challenge, and especially during these 3 weeks as we elevate our sensitivity in all areas of interpersonal communication, this is a big part of our mission. So just a quick recap, we spoke about the fact that we're now here to bash the internet. It does many great things as far as spreading Torah, spreading chesed, spreading connectedness, and sometimes informing about negative things that have to be spread. But at the same time, the Lashon Hara that was always an issue has much greater traction, much greater speed, much greater reach, and much greater lasting power on the internet. But in addition to that, what we focused on is that our whole environment and sensitivity has changed. And we began by quoting a Tosfos, which reflected the belief that people might be nasty, but they wouldn't be nasty in public or in front of the person they're talking about. And clearly, that has radically changed. We talked about how that shows up in other areas of Anas Devarim as well. We talked about the prohibition of Avak Lashon Hara, which means we're responsible also for what we provoke. And of course, on the internet, again, we're dealing with such greater numbers and such greater readiness to jump in with a negative comment. I mentioned Rabbeinu Yonah's suggestion long before there was an internet, but when there were still large crowds, that you counteract that by setting a tone of what kind of comments, what kind of conversation will be welcome and will not be welcome. And we talked also about some related concerns. We talked about sharing emails that are meant to mock the writer and how easy that is. How when we yell at somebody else, now we copy 10 other people, they should hear what we're doing. And that's something that wouldn't have occurred to us in previous generations. And crucially, we talked about the prohibition of Kabbalah's Lashon Hara and what that means in the internet context and how it comes at us from two very significant directions. A greater need on one hand to be informed and to be aware of what surrounds us and all the different ways in which that can impact us. But also a greater sensitivity to just how much false information is out there and how easily that can be spread and how easily that can infiltrate our own consciousness. And the general elevated sensitivity that these weeks ask of us is all the more relevant when we factor in all of these many complexities and challenges. So I thank you very much. God willing, next week our plan is to speak more generally, a little bit more philosophically about the Lashon Hara and the 3 weeks and the whole time we find ourselves in. Hopefully that will give us a little bit of added perspective. Wish everyone a wonderful night. Yashikara.